Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Well, hello there. You poor unfortunate bastards have found another episode of the Video Nasty Project. Why do I say poor unfortunate bastards? Because two-time offender Uli Lamel is back for another movie. Tonight's movie is Revenge of the Boogeyman. Boogeyman!
Boogeyman!
60% stock footage from the first movie, 40% original movie, and 100% bullshit. Check out the trailer.
Remember the original Boogeyman? Well, he's back, more terrifying than ever, in Revenge of the Boogeyman. A spirit of evil captured forever in the glass of a mirror. Under the Hollywood sky, a filmmaker's dream becomes a nightmare. Once released, no one can halt the relentless revenge of the Boogeyman.
That was Revenge of the Boogeyman.
We just saw a piece of crap that was Revenge of the Boogeyman, a.k.a. Boogeyman 2. Oh, Jesus.
I need the brain bleach.
No. Brain bleach is like a Nazi exploitation movie. This one's just stupid washing over you. The movie starts out with, I mean, quite literally, some Andy Milligan shit. Because you have these whiteboards that have this kind of blood-colored writing on it, scrawling, you know, the stars, and it's intercut with Lacey and this chauffeur driving through downtown Hollywood. And it is so fucking amateurish. Oh my God. There's this one scene where you can see the dude holding the top of the board, his fingers in the shot. You're like, what the fuck, man?
And it looks like somebody's just written it on with red marker and then erased it off. I mean, there's scenes where you can see the erase marks.
So that's how we open our movie. And it's not going to get any better from that, folks. Lacey gets up to the Hollywood Hills. And she is invited because she knows a movie producer, which is actually played by Uli Lamel. And Suzanne Love, is the one who plays Lacey, and they're married. They're an actual real-life couple. I suspect what happened is that Lamel said, I need to shoot this pool scene. I've got a pool. Fuck it. We'll just shoot my backyard. That's how cheap this looks.
Yeah.
So we get to this pool scene, and the camera is set up at one end, and there's this director.
He literally has the open shirt with the hairy chest and the gold chain with the pendant on it.
And he's berating his cameraman for, man, we need to have some skin in this movie. Skin sells. We're trying to make an exploitation movie. Get her to take her top off. And then you cut to the lady acquiescing to the demands of the sleazy producer and takes her top off. But the crazy thing is, she's up to her chest, up to her neck in water. So she takes off from ties from back and ties from there and throws the bikini out. You don't get to see any titties.
No.
Why are you demanding titties in your sleazy exploitation movie and then you completely fail to deliver on the goods? That's fucking irresponsible filmmaking.
You just want to see boobs.
I just want to see some fucking titties. There's a sound clip for you. They cut to that evening, the producer and the producer's friend, they say, tell us your story. Well, back in the day, I was a young 3-year-old, and then she goes through the entire fucking movie. Quite literally, about 60% of this movie is recycled stock footage from the original movie.
Every now and then there's interspersed scenes where one of her audience asks her to clarify something or, you know, expand upon a particular point.
They cut away to the director saying, hey, I think this is going to be a dynamite success.
Yeah.
He's talking to one of his co-producers, and he's saying, you know, Halloween is out. Horror movies, slasher movies are out. They want supernatural movies now. Brian De Palma and Blowout, that was an $18 million bomb. And you could make 13 of these movies for that $18 million. And I'm sitting there thinking, it's like, dude, you've just broken the prime rule of never remind your audience of a much better movie when you're making a shit movie. I could be watching Dress to Kill right now. I could be watching Blowout right now.
And it would be better.
And it'd be far better than this piece of shit. So they pretty much fill up the first 25-30 minutes of runtime with flashbacks. They finally get to this Hollywood party. And I'm thinking the movie is trying to do some sort of social commentary, because he wheels in like an agent, a stuntman, a bunch of people that he knows in the industry, and they're all completely vapid, and every line of dialogue out of their mouth is absolutely puerile and infantile and very
lacking in just about anything interesting. In fact, this was the point where I fell asleep.
To be fair, you then conceded to watch the movie the rest of the way through the next day, so you didn't Mary Whitehouse it. But
no.
Yeah, no, it's insomnia and cure-all for you, man.
They did have a good aspect to this utterly boring piece of drivel. They had some great lighting effects with the kind of, not really the flashlight underneath the chin, but they definitely played off of that. Great shadows. Everybody looked kind of sinister. They had these like effects with insect eye kind of thing going on, and yet at the same time everybody was as completely non-scary and non-threatening as they could possibly be by what they were saying.
They're trying to establish this weird mood, and everything they're talking is absolutely just puerile drivel. And like, why are you doing this? Other than, I'm a German director and I'm in a hard house film making sleaze.
It's like they completely wasted the good aspects of that particular sequence with cool effects and nothing to justify them. I mean, literally nothing to justify them.
And there's a couple of other instances down the road where he also did something weird art housey just for the sake of being weird art housey and not actually having any point to it. You have to have a reason to have your camera canted to one side.
Also, except for Lacey herself and her friend, who is the one who's going out with the director. These are the only two characters in the entire film that you actually have any sort of sense for, any connection, any concept of them being real people rather than tropes.
There's absolutely no character development whatsoever to any of these folks.
The only reason we feel sympathy for Lacey and her friend at all is because we see more time with them. Like, there's some actual scenes where they're genuinely interacting as if they were friends. But that's it.
The only reason you have any sympathy for Lacey is because her character was established in the first one, assuming you've seen the first one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's nothing to these characters at all.
You don't feel any sympathy for any of the rest of the cast. They're all just throwaways.
Exactly. And the problem is, yes, you can do satire and have thinly written characters, but you have to execute that satire well, and this movie doesn't, and therefore this movie falls with a thud on its face.
Well, there's a whole other aspect to it where it completely falls on its face.
Go on.
Yes, the killings. Oh my god. The first killing, you've got one couple, they're off talking, and they're building up the mood. The music shifts to kind of creepy, and you see these gardening tools, and they start, like, moving around and stuff, and then you realize that they're floating in the air. You don't actually see them suspended in the air. Rather, it's them being moved in front of the camera in such a way that makes them look like they're floating.
Yeah, it's just the dude underneath the camera just waving it in front of the lens. It's like, but you couldn't have sprung for 10 cents of fucking fishing wire.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's just like, oh, God, it's really weak effects. But the mood is a good mood because they build up. And the blonde starlet who, for out the entire rest of the movie, where there's a scene where you're like, oh my God, let her be the first one killed, please. She actually has her one moment of goodness is where, like, wait, there's something's not right here. And she's looking around and she's getting scared. And the guy she's talking to is looking around and he's getting scared. And then they just have a completely weak, wasted death because you don't even see hardly any of the actual impact of the weapons. There's like a Dixie cup worth of blood that's thrown out.
Oh, yeah, it's just a shot of the guy's hand, and they just kind of dribble some fake blood on it.
Yeah.
So it is a completely non-entity.
It's implied that the electric hedge clippers got to him, but you don't actually see that. In fact, it's a little uncertain whether the hedge clippers got him or if it was the pruning shears that got him. It's that bad. And part of you is like, yay, the stupid blonde got killed. But on the other hand, it's like, that was the only good moment for any of the characters who got killed, was that little lead-in of creepiness and weirdness, and then thud.
I'll give you that. The movie does have a little bit of skill in building up the mood and the tension before the kills. Because, like,
They
kept doing that. Like, the scene in the bathroom. It's this sleazy record producer coming in, and he's hitting on a starlet. And, I mean, he's got this handlebar mustache, and he's all sleazy as fuck. And it's kind of creepy, and then the lights go weird.
And the starlet is a pretty woman, and the thing is, she's a genuinely pretty woman. This woman doesn't need a scrap of makeup. She's nice-looking, but in a genuine, natural sort of way. She doesn't look like the blonde bimbo. She has a natural, earthy, genuine attractiveness to her. You can see why the guy would want to hit on her. But, on the other hand, her character doesn't get developed at all.
And then the lights start getting weird, and the toothbrush, the electric toothbrush, flies off the shelf and into the creepy dude's mouth, and kills him that way. Strangles him that way. Which could be, in a Tom Savini's hands, really fucking brilliant. Then the starlet, she gets sprayed with some Barbasol and is like got this whipped cream all over her face and blah,
shaving cream. Yeah.
And dies that way. And we's like, did she just drown? We'd never see her again. I mean, it was that like acid in the spray can?
No, it was just pure concentrated evil.
Apparently so. It was.
Oh, and then there was the ones in the garage. Oh, yeah. You want to handle that one?
I want to handle that one because this one pisses me off so much. So you've got the stuntman and the starlet, another starlet, a third starlet, in the garage, in the car, and like, oh, I got to trade in my Mercedes for one of these, and it's like a VW thing or something. And I'm like, okay, you have never been anywhere near a Mercedes, you motherfucker.
Yeah.
And so he's hitting on her, and then all of a sudden this...
He hears something.
Oh, yeah.
He looks around and he opens up the sunroof and stands up and starts looking around. And he goes, whoosh, and vanishes because the garden hose abducted him.
And she's all looking around. It's like, where'd he go? Where'd he go? And she gets out, comes around and looking under the car for him because obviously he slipped under the car. And this ladder comes up, bumps her into the butt, into the tailpipe, boom. On her mouth, into the tailpipe, the pedal, and she fills her head with carbon monoxide. Now, my issue with this movie is that you have this car with a sunroof. You have somebody looking around. She sticks her head up. She's looking around. What is the logical conclusion for a poltergeist to do? She should have been, in a more clever movie, decapitated by the sunroof. That would have been awesome. Yeah. This movie doesn't do that. Okay, the tailpipe is kind of awesome, but no, not the way they executed it. So fuck these deaths. Fuck this movie. Oh, I've tipped my hand for if I like it or not. I'm sorry.
Oh, and then there's the butler. Oh my God, the butler has been possessed by the evil meerschaum, and it's stuck in a hole in his glove. And
a fuse to his palm, presumably. Yeah.
And anytime he kills any of these other poor, I don't know if they're unfortunates or not, because they get to get out of the movie earlier. every time the mirror kills somebody, it has the guy hold up its hand.
And then there's a flash of light on their face or whatever.
But it gets established in the first film that whenever you threw any part of the mirror into water, it would blow up and catch flames and die a horrible death.
That's how they got rid of it they threw it down the well. And the movie, the second movie, takes great pains to point this out because they show those explosions in the flashback bits.
Yep.
So it is well established that's what's going to happen when it gets wet. And then?
They have the butler attack some of the other people physically. They all fall into the pool and, hey, no explosion.
They just kind of wrestle for a little bit. He's still possessed by the shard.
And he just drowns. And they don't even do a killer coming back from the dead routine. You know, you think if you have a puppet and you're evil and you're going to control it, at least you got to do the classic, the killer's dead, oh, wait, he's not jump scare that, you know, is such a great classic trope. But no, it's just like, just kind of a quiet drowning and just...
To be fair, they kind of almost sort of do. Because after the movie is over and after they drown the butler, they cut to some time later. And they drive up into the hills. And there's
very delayed.
And there's makeshift grave with this two sticks lashed together. And I'm like, okay, first thing. So all these people then died in your party. The butler then died at your party. You took the butler's body, dragged it up into the hills, buried it in secret, and nobody noticed what the fuck was going on with the rest of the guests?
The cops would be over you like white on rice for hiding evidence.
But then, we're not done yet. The movie, so Lacey goes over and is like, I have to visit his grave one more time. I have to be sad over his grave. And she's crying at this mound of dirt, and then all of a sudden this hand explodes up out of the dirt, and then the fist turns and it opens up and there's the shard and it explodes the car with like the other girlfriend in it. And I'm like, so you buried the dude in secret and you didn't remove the shard from his hand.
And why is Lacey going over and crying to his grave when she and the butler had virtually no emotional rapport anywhere else in the movie? In fact, the scenes involving both of them together were very limited. He gives her a drink. That's a perfectly butlery thing to do, but it's not really a connection.
So, the continuity is non-existent, as proven by the what happens to the water. And then there's bits that Lacey remembers that she was never involved at. She's recounting her story, and she's talking about, well, there were these four teenagers on the beach, and they were having a cookout. And me and my son, I took him to fishing, and we were on the other side of the lake. And then the mirror shined on them, and the spirit killed them. And she wasn't there. She didn't see it. How did she know that these people died because of her and her fishing accident?
She also recaps the deaths of the two teenage girls and the boy in the house where the killing originally took place. She wasn't there for that. She'd already left the house. Her and her husband were, like, back at the farmhouse, and he was putting the mirror back together at that point. She didn't know. Couldn't have.
Now, I guess you could make a case that if you accept the thesis that this movie is a parody and satire of the Hollywood machine, that these incompetent effects and this kind of shitty slasher movie is a condemnation of shitty slasher movies of the era. But the problem is, again, that the movie is so poorly executed that you're just saying, oh, this is a fucking piece of crap, as opposed to an actual satire of bad horror movies.
You don't grasp that it's satire. You can't see that because it's so... The in-your-facedness just isn't there, and the comedy isn't there, and the dark reflection. Well, we have that, because we have an evil mirror. But that's the only reason why we have a dark reflection. We don't get any of those elements, really. I mean, it's taken only up to us as being moderately competent and experienced film analyzers to get that concept. I think the average audience would go, we're done. I want my $5 back.
So we've pretty much savaged this movie top to bottom. Was there anything that this movie got right?
Well, there was the lead up for the first couple death where the woman actually pauses and looks around and goes, something's wrong. I liked that scene.
All right. Anything else?
I liked the explodey car. I thought the whole lead up to it was very shoddy, but I liked the car blowing up itself. Especially since it was a surprise that I really didn't see coming.
Despite the fact that they completely ripped the ending off from Carrie.
Oh,
it's like, oh, you hate Brian De Palma, but you steal his fucking ending.
The only other thing that they did right was having the possession scene where the butler gets nabbed by the evil Meerschaard. That actually was moderately well done, because you could sense that he was fighting it. You know, he's struggling, he's shaking. It's obviously a traumatic process for him. I liked that scene.
I've got one for you. Because the extensive use of flashback footage, we get to see the annoying as fuck little kid, the Boogeyman kid, get killed again.
That's true.
That was the highlight of the movie for me.
Well, another highlight could be the incredibly awesome death of the teenage kid with the knife through the back of the neck and out the mouth. We do get to see that again, too. Right.
But it's censored, so...
Yeah.
So you got anything else left you got to say about this movie? This piece of crap? This terrible movie?
No, it sucked.
It sucked. It stank.
It was boring.
And that was the problem. If you... Just give me some interesting over-the-topness and it would have been fine.
Some camp, some better execution, anything.
The interesting thing about The Boogeyman 2 was that Uli LaMelle didn't want to do it. The first one was a raging success, made tons of cash. Paramount said, man, we got to have another one. He said, nah, fuck off. So what happened was that after he was nagged by investors for a long time, he said, fine, I'll make a movie. I want to do what I want to do. And they said, fine, here's a pile of money. So that's how 2 came about. And then a little bit later...
Wait a sec. You said he had a pile of money? Where did that pile of money go? Because it wasn't evident in the budget for this film.
They blew up a car.
Well,
they
okay.
did blow up a car.
That's true. That requires money. But that's probably really the only extravagant expenditure they had here.
Because they shot at his house. They had no gore effects whatsoever. And I bet you, Diamonds to Donuts, that all those actors were in fact his friends.
Yeah.
Hell, Lacey was his wife. So all his cast was dirt cheap.
Yeah.
So he goes and makes this movie. About... Let's see, so that was in 83. And then in 2003, and we'll get back to the 90s because there's something there too. But in 2003, he does the Revenge of the Boogeyman director's cut, or Boogeyman 2 Do, which basically takes all the stock footage from the original and plays that out in real time. Takes all the footage from Boogeyman 2 and hyper compresses it like a blipvert so it just flies past. And then... He has shot some footage of himself in this gray room. So it's like this. So he's just like this. And it's shot on video, so it doesn't match anything of the previous 2 movies. And it's him being arrested by the cops 20 years down the line. And he just kind of drones on in this monotone. So he recaps the events of 1 and 2 again. But we're not done yet. So... Rewind back to about 1993. And he does The Boogeyman Returns, where there's this girl, and she's psychic, and she starts having hallucinations of Stocking Mask Man. And she's being chased by him. She's picking up premonitions of death. And eventually what happens is she winds up getting such a psychic rapport with the stocking cap man that she travels back in time mentally to the first movie and starts warning Billy, pick up the mirror, throw it in the well. Fuck you, Uli Lamel. Fuck your stupid movie. Fuck your franchise. So, Brad, was leaving it off the list erroneous? Should it have been on the list?
No. It doesn't even belong anywhere near the list. It's not nasty at all.
I think the only reason that it wound up on the list was because they had so much footage and so much violence from the original movie transplanted to the second one. So they took a look at it and said, well, if it's got all this from the first movie, then obviously it's got to go because the first one's got to go.
After they finish with the recap, the deaths are not gratuitous at all.
Yes, no, off the list, acquitted, not on the list at all in the slightest. Brad, did you like Revenge of the Boogeyman?
No, it was boring and insipid, and I fell asleep. How about yourself? Oh.
We have seen some amateurish productions in our course of the project up to this point, but this one takes the cake because it's so fucking lazy. It's nothing but stock footage for the whole thing. All it takes is for one bear trap to the face, and I'm on board with your movie. And there's no creativity like that in this movie. So fuck this movie. So there we go. There's Revenge of the Boogeyman, aka Boogeyman 2. Fuck this movie. We're done. And that's it for Uli Lamel, at least as far as the Video Nasty list goes. He went on to do all sorts of terrible, terrible movies further down the road, but that's not our problem. In the meantime, I want you, right now, to drop me an email. The email address is thevideonastyproject@gmail.com, and tell me how much I suck for making you watch this episode, or how much Uli sucks for having you watch that bullshit, or, you know, because you want to say, I love you guys. And then stop in next week when we get another lovely flick off the shelf that'll be just as good. I'm guarantee. Stay evil.
Would anyone care for dessert?